And we have reached Friday at the time when we normally do the round table, so we should normally do the round table,
Camelot.
So let's do it.
Camelot. It's only a model.
When that's the round table, we dance where we're able. We do routines.
Sitting around the round table, we have our friend from For the Win, Caroline Darney at CW Darney. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. We've got one more guest here, too.
Oh, do we have? Who do we have there?
We have Maverick here.
Maverick. Wait, we have a dog not named after somebody from the University of Virginia?
She's not Tony Bennett Bennett. She's Elizabeth Bennett, Pride and Prejudice Bennett. I've said this
before. Okay, my fault. And Brian Geisinger, Devil's Den Pack Pride at @BGeis_Bird is joining us. And because if we gave out his location, the feds would be coming. He is with us just through the magic of audio. So I'll start with you, Caroline, because I can see you. Let's start with Duke and Carolina. Duke won the first one. It was pretty close. Carolina had every opportunity to win that game in the second half. Duke was just a little bit better. How do you see this coming up?
I think, well, if it's any indication how Carolina has played in the last two games, specifically from the three-point line, I think this will be a very different outcome. That is one of the things that was a mess, to put it nicely, I think, for Carolina. I know coming into the Virginia game, they were shooting like 28%, 29%. Like it was, I think, sub 30. And we know how that went, especially the first half. I think they were 8 for 14 in the first half against Virginia. And then they made 14 threes against Florida State. And look, I know Florida State is down. Their record's not great. It is still a Leonard Hamilton team full of complete athletes. Right. So I'm not as, you know, any win that you can get, especially at Florida State, is always a good win in my book. So I think that this is going to be a much different looking Duke-Carolina matchup. But I think Duke has looked way better in the last couple of games as well. So although it's not going to have numbers next to their name or maybe some of the hype, you know, arguably the best game in the ACC this weekend is actually Pitt-Miami.
Might be.
You know, that's for the teams that are, you know, fighting out for a share of first place, because the winner gets at least a share, if not outright, if Virginia can't handle it at home against Louisville, which is a sentence I hate saying out loud. So
that would be staggering if Virginia capitulated at home to a team that Louisville still has just 4 wins, right?
Yeah, 4-26.
4-26. I can't even believe that is their record. Guys, Duke at Carolina. Thoughts?
Yeah, well, since we got some Jane Austen talk earlier, let's have a little sense and sensibility.
Oh,
here,
my God!
On a Friday.
I'm leaving. Yeah.
No, it would only be nonsense if Virginia were to somehow lose this game to the Cards. It was close last time.
But, three-point game. You know. Three-point game at the Yum Center.
Let's not talk about that one.
Yeah, it was a strange. It was a strange game. Louisville is, to be clear, like, they're playing better.
Yes, they are.
I mean,
and Ellis is legit. He's legit. He's a legit dude.
He's been awesome. It's weird sometimes seeing Louisville fans like mad at him online. I don't know what else you could be asking from this guy. He's trying his best. And as far as Duke and UNC goes, it's interesting because I rewatched that game yesterday. And I'll be honest with you, I was at that game and I kind of forgot how tight it was.
Yeah.
I mean, it really was just a couple of plays down the stretch. And, you know, Derek Lively with a huge putback bucket off the Jeremy Roach miss when Duke went empty side with Filipowski and Roach, and Roach is able to get downhill. So, I mean, I think both of these teams, Duke and UNC, are playing better than they were a month ago. Duke's defense has been really, really good the last month. Top 15 nationally in defensive efficiency. And Derek Lively, like, I know he's not, like, a huge scorer. His usage rate is under 14% this season. But what he's doing for Duke on both sides of the court, being a pressure point at the rim with his ability to get downhill in the pick and roll, and with his defense and his scheme versatility, being able to switch out, being able to play at the level, being able to drop, and then also offer elite rim protection. He's top 5 nationally in block rate, too. I am fascinated to see what the Caleb Love-Tyrese Proctor matchup looks like.
Yeah.
That was one that You know, it really felt like Proctor got the best of him in that matchup. Last time, though, I don't think Love had a terrible game in Cameron, and he still hit some shots and it was still able to create some. But just Proctor's his ascendance as like one of the better perimeter defenders in the ACC is a big deal for Duke. So I'm fascinated to see this game, and I can't wait to see what you know, HD Hubert Davis has kind of cooked up to throw at Duke's defense.
A couple of things about Caleb Love. I think in the first half he made three threes, and we thought we were going to get that kind of a Caleb Love performance, like we got whether it was at Cameron on Coach K's senior night or in the Final Four when Caleb Love was tremendous in that game as well. But he didn't sustain it. Lively had big moments on both ends. I think he had eight blocks in the game, and Duke, for all of their offensive rebounding ability, and they're one of the best, if not the best, offensive rebounding team in the league. Strangely enough, it's not Carolina this year. It's not part of their repertoire, although they're good at it when they put their mind to it. Duke got some big offensive rebounds in the second half, especially late, that led to baskets that really created that separation. Brian, I want to dig down a little deeper on Tyrese Proctor here. Because Proctor, first half of the year, was a good defender and a bad shooter. Second half of the year, he's looked like a great defender and a pretty capable shooter. So, and like, I think he really did a great job in Terquavion Smith in the game against State on Tuesday night. Give me a sense of the development from first half of the year to the second half of the year for him.
Yeah, I mean, as far as the shooting, just like the sort of like raw percentages go, I'm not surprised to see that jump up. Not like he's shooting off the charts good, but like I think he was just getting bad luck in terms of like catch and shoot threes. Like you look at an indicator like his free throw percentage, he's a great free throw shooter, right? Now he never gets to the line. Before the State game, I think he had only five free throw attempts the entire month of February.
Because he can't beat his man off the dribble.
He's crafty and he's got good size and he's got nice touch on floaters and pull up twos when he's going up against drop coverage. But yeah, he's not a guy that's just gonna like turn the corner every single time and create advantage that way. He uses his size, his passing, and his craft and his shooting to kind of get into the paint and make reads and over the top of the defense. Speaking of defense, on the other side of the court, like his development is huge there. And he plays a style of defense that. I think Caroline and, you know, other UVA fans will probably appreciate, because he's not like – you look at his blocks and steals numbers, he doesn't get a lot. Like, he's pretty low in terms of, like, those percentages. But he is just the ultimate, like, do your assignment, do your job kind of guy. And there's some versatility baked into that because he guards different dudes, sort of similar to what Reese Beekman does for Virginia, where Tony Bennett just says – okay, we're just going to put you on the best perimeter, or sort of like the most like impactful opposing perimeter offensive player. So like when Virginia or Duke play Virginia Tech, Tyrese Proctor and Reese Beekman, they're not guarding Sean Padula. They guard Hunter Couture, who doesn't dribble at all, right? Like he just comes off screens and handoffs. And Proctor totally took him out of that game. Just the second time all year that Couture hasn't made a three, a season low, 2 3-point attempts in that. And like in that game, it's a team effort, and having Lively floating around just menacing everywhere, that is a game changer. But Proctor, it's the screen navigation, it's his size. Like I was courtside for that UNC game. He's just taller. Like he's bigger than Caleb Love. You know, like he does have some legit size to be like a point guard or combo guard defender. So again, with him, it's the mentality, it's the size, it's the screen navigation. And it is just the ultimate, like, keep the ball out of the paint. Or when he's guarding a guy like Couture, being locked in topside and just never losing touch with his assignment.
Caroline, by the way, I think Tyrese Proctor is an homage to the way Virginia plays defense. And Duke is also honoring Virginia by playing at a really slow pace this year. Which is...
if it works, it works.
Which is fun.
They have one guy that gets steals, Duke. Seriously. Like, it really is only Filipowski.
Right.
The only one.
Look, I think it's a fascinating matchup. Caroline, do you think that Carolina has to win this game?
Boy, yes. At home... there's a mixture of has to in this for me, because has to in a sense of for their momentum heading into the ACC tournament, mm-hmm. I think it's a has to. For it being at home, I think it's a has to. For getting a well, and this is what's weird, so I guess right there they are Carolina is in risk of losing their one quad one win if Virginia what? Continues to have this inefficiency going on where they could slip outside of that whatever is 35 range on the net, which
it's 30 and regardless 30, what happens they because they're playing Louisville, Virginia could slip a spot anyway,
which is Virginia wild. We all win. Have thoughts on that stuff.
Yeah,
it's so they could lose, they could end up like still 0-8 in quad one game, you know, whatever.
So dumb.
Even though they have the win against Virginia, which I think should reasonably count as a good win. But and it's the rivalry, you lost the other one. Like, I think that in that sense, but they're still, as of last time I saw it, which I think was last night watching basketball, so recent, no games have happened since. Lenardi has them as one of the first teams out. So, right. Yes, this is a has to win for them. There are going to be a handful of opportunities in the ACC tournament. This has to be, this is a team, I think they have to win this one against Duke, and they have to at least win two to feel comfortable-ish mm-hmm. on Sunday.
Yeah, look.
I mean, the ish is still there.
There's going to be a lot of good quad three opportunities in Greensboro for everybody in the...
the excitement.
At the risk of being repetitive, and I've talked about this a lot, I have no problem with the net as a ranking. I have a problem with how we group all of these teams, and because I know that the bottom of the league has dragged everybody's numbers down, to me, it's making what would otherwise be quad one or quad two. Like, Miami's a quad one win. I don't care where you play them. Yeah. Miami is good. Yeah. That's a quad one win. They're 35th in the net. So on your home floor, Miami's a two. The whole thing is silly.
My thing, and I get, you can't just say like, oh, everyone, you know, everyone's being a little too hard on the ACC. But if you actually, when I look at Notre Dame, this is more me being like, I had them a top four team coming into the season because of everyone they brought back. But it did not surprise me that they beat Pitt. One, with the emotions of Mike Bray's last home game. They are a very good team in South Bend, just historically, consistently, since he's been there. But also, the number of games that they've lost by 1 to 8 points in this stretch, where it's not necessarily, I'm not saying, like, they're really good, you guys. Like, don't be mean to Notre Dame. But they are much better than their record reflects. Like, they have guys that can shoot the ball. Their defense is not what I expected, and I think that's been their biggest issue. But that's where I get kind of, like, Boston College is significantly better than last year. Like, significantly better.
Yeah, I agree with that. They're like, I call them plucky.
They are. If you get them on the wrong day, and it's just one of those, like, there are other teams that have played them close. This is not just because Virginia lost to them. I've always said, like, dude, you don't want to play midweek games in Chestnut Hill. Like, avoid that at all costs, like, for all of eternity.
But it's entirely because Virginia lost up there. That's fine.
Over the past couple seasons, like, Duke and UNC, like, they've picked up losses in Chestnut Hill on, like, a Tuesday night. You don't want to do it. You don't want to go up there.
I mean, look, I've kind of joked. I'm sort of making jokes about all of it, but I think Boston College is kind of plucky. They're going to give you a problem. I think they'll give somebody a good team a problem in Greensboro if they can get past whatever the morass is of Tuesday night. I'm going to go right back to Caroline here because she's laughing at my jokes. Who's the ACC player of the year?
Oh, I went back and forth, but I think I'm going Isaiah Wong.
Okay. Yeah,
I just think, you know, he's a weird case when you look statistically. I think this is a year where there hasn't, to me, been someone that is leaps and bounds leagues ahead of everybody else.
Right.
And there are cases to be made, I think, for several people.
Yes.
And for Isaiah Wong, for me, it's he does a lot of things solidly. There's not necessarily... He scores a lot of points. He's got a good three-point shooting percentage. He's going to be in the top 25 in a lot of categories mm-hmm. across the ACC. But he's not, like, because you look at, like, an Armando Bacot, and you're like, this guy gets buckets, this guy gets rebounds. Like, it's clear with the double-double. So I went between the two of them. but I think I'm giving it to Wong because his team's in first place.
That's fine.
Is that bad? Is that a bad differentiator? Well, I feel like that's, because that's a lazy differentiator.
Because his team is in first place is a bad differentiator, or whatever word I just made up, in my opinion. Brian Geisinger, Devil's Den, Pack Pride, who's the ACC Player of the Year?
Don't forget streaking the lawn too, baby.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You got a couple streaking the lawn.
That's right.
Your contributors on here. But just real quickly about Boston College, Quinton Post makes them tough. Like a 7-footer that can shoot and pass. Mm-hmm. Like that's just a different piece that not every college team is like equipped to defend. It makes it tough. I think there's a lot of guys that are like B+ ACC Player of the Year candidates. It's like you can make a case for a bunch of different guys.
Yeah.
But I would actually agree with Caroline here. Like I would go Isaiah Wong too. I think he's been, you know, it's interesting. I thought Tyree Appleby and Terquavion Smith for most of the year were like the best guard in the league. And I think you could actually make cases for those guys or for Joyner.
Yeah.
But I think Isaiah Wong start to finish has been like the best perimeter offensive player in the league. His team is really, really good. He gets steals defensively. And I mean, he's the best player on the league's best team. And I think in a moment like this, where Baycott has not really established himself like this, Kyle Filipowski struggled a little bit down the stretch here. Yeah. You know, other veteran guys like Justin Mutz maybe didn't have quite the season you thought he would. Hunter Tyson, PJ Hall, like there's a bunch of guys, but I'll go Isaiah Wong as well.
I think there's going to be 7, maybe 8 different players that get votes for ACC Player of the Year. Have we gone completely off the rails and done 10 player first teams now? Are we doing that? Right?
Okay. I don't think yes. yet, have
okay,
we? We've had ties, right? Where we've had 6 guys on first team or something?
Right now, the old rule used to be, I have no idea how many players are on first team anymore, but if it was 5, in order for somebody to be the ACC Player of the Year, he had to be on the first team. Because there yeah. was a time way back in the day where the person who got the most ACC votes was on second team. Which, of course, is just silly. But something like that could happen this year. I think we did a poll last week. We have to go here in a sec. Or earlier this week. ACC Player of the Year. Armando Baycott. Jarkel Joyner, who would be my pick. And I put Isaiah Wong. And then I put Roger Ayers. Because
I saw that.
Right. I mean, why not? But it's very strange. There's so many players. The reason I say Joyner, I think Joyner's been their best player at State. I love Terquavion Smith. He's their best prospect. But I think start to finish in terms of consistency, efficiency as well, I think Joyner's been their guy. And he's certainly played well in almost every game down the stretch. So he would be...
I think State knocks someone off big in the tournament. I'm not going to... Not in the ACC tournament.
In the NCAA tournament. I agree with you. Yeah. That backcourt.
That's where all this conversation about which conference is best, et cetera, I understand it all comes out to what, like, but I'm sorry, like, wouldn't want to see, if I were a 1 seed, I don't want to see an 8 seed State. You get Turk heated up, you mm-hmm. get, like, Burns in the post, maybe a different way, like, if it's officiate, like, depending on how you officiate it when you're playing NC State with yep. some of those, like, offensive fouls, but.
All right, real quick, Caroline, who wins the ACC tournament? I know we don't even know brackets because it's going to change this weekend. Just give me a pick for the ACC tournament.
Miami.
Brian.
Yeah, Miami. Give me that offense and in that starting lineup
right.
of Miami.
Sight unseen. I'll take the Wolfpack. Caroline Darney from For the Win at CW Darney. Streaking the Lawn. Brian Geisinger, Streaking Lawn. He writes for every ACC website in the 24/7, right? 24/7 family? Did I get that right?
In some Vox SB Nation, too.
Gosh, yeah, so. You're amazing.
Brian,
at @bguys_. He is a maven. @bguys_bird on Twitter. Thank you both. I appreciate it.
You guys have a good weekend.
Awesome. And we had literary references. It was tremendous.